Blog Talk Radio.
We'll ride them someday. Wild Horses from the Rolling Stones, a song that Mick Jagger said was about the usual thing of not wanting to be on the road and being a million miles away from where you wanted to be. It was released as the second U.S.-only single in June 1971. Wild Horses reached number 28 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. A reworked studio version recorded in 1995 appeared on the album Stripped, and that version was released as a single in early 1996.
All right. Hey, how are you, Stephen? Hey, welcome back, well, my friends, to the show where we pretend a lot. I'm Jay Hatter, your host. Along with me, co-host is Stephen 76. How are you doing, Stephen?
Doing all right. Ready to rock out in honor.
And in the back, we have Deborah Lee. She's the owner. She does all the hard work, so I can sit out here. We can sit out here and look pretty. Thanks, you, Deb.
Indeed.
Hey. Well, two pretty guys.
Well, we, in beanbag chairs. We had some bad news this week. On August 24th, Charlie Watts, the drummer from the Rolling Stones, passed away. He was 80 years old. Quite the individual. I never knew a lot about him. He was born Charles Robert Watts, June 2nd, 1941. He was an English musician who was the drummer for the rock band The Rolling Stones. That's not too bad. From 1963 until his death this month, 2021. One of the band's core members, Watts, alongside lead vocalist and frontman Mick Jagger and guitarist Keith Richards, were the only members of the band to perform on all of their studio albums. He cited jazz as a major influence on his drumming style. Originally trained as a graphic artist, Watts developed an interest in jazz at a young age and joined the band Blues Incorporated. He also started playing drums in London's rhythm and blues clubs, where he met future bandmates Jagger, Richards, and Brian Jones. In January 63, he left Blues Incorporated and joined the Rolling Stones as the drummer, while doubling as a designer of their record sleeves and tour stages. Watts' first public appearance as a permanent member of the Rolling Stones was in February 1963. He remained with the group until his death 58 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Along from his career with the Rolling Stones, Watts toured with his own band, the Charlie Watts Quintet, and appeared in London and Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club with Charlie Watts Quintet. And we'll have some more information, a little more trivia on him. But yeah, it was sad. I had heard that he was ill and didn't tour with him the last time the Stones did a little mini tour, whatever they were doing. Charlie wasn't going to be there. So he was, I always noticed he had a backbeat, and that's got to be the jazz influenced. But he had a definite style of
Different
style of drumming. He wasn't showboating. I read some articles on him, and he said that he couldn't do solo. He didn't like any drum solos. He didn't do them. He goes. I get into it, and I just lose myself. I don't know what I'm doing. So I find it hard to believe. I think he was just a humble man. Didn't like the front.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
And if you think about it, there is no drum solos on any Rolling Stones.
It's true.
Song. Let's see. Charlie Watts was a flashy drummer. Unlike Bonham and Keith Moon, he never spilled all over his kick in the drunken, dangerous tightrope backed on the verge of tumbling down on his band. Instead, Watts had quietly anchored the Rolling Stones for more than five decades, serving as their terrific rhythm section's key component. A solid and understated drummer whose love of jazz informed nearly every one of his professionally played beats. That's that backbeat. The Stones never would have had crowned the world's greatest rock band without Watts, one of the world's greatest rock and roll drummers. Need proof? We have 10 pieces of evidence for you. And they've got some songs. Well, Did you guys hear that?
No, I didn't hear anything.
Okay, good. I just had a thing started on the, where I was reading. It starts a some kind of... Well, anyway, what's the first Rolling Stone songs you guys remember? First one, you know, on the radio, probably. Mine would have been Honky Tonk Woman. I would have been Honky Tonk Woman. Yeah. Played that a lot. And yeah, it seems like they were always in conflict or in competition with the Beatles, you know, here at the same time. You were either Beatles, just like Motown. Temptations of the Four Tops. Rock, it was the Beatles or Rolling Stones. I thought it was an unfair comparison. But I did like the earlier Rolling Stones, the Ruby Tuesday.
I'm looking at the list by date of release. And, like, for one, I guess I just didn't realize that they went all the way back to 64. But I am realizing right now that I don't have a clue what quite a few of those are. And as I read, I think the first one I remember hearing is, and probably because they still play it now often, is Paint It Black.
Yeah, you know, they say Satisfaction was the one that they had broken through to the top. It was the first real mega hit they had. It was early in their career. I disagree. I think Paint It Black was one of the greatest songs ever written. That and along with California Dreamin' and Purple Haze were three of the songs that the helicopters in Vietnam would blast. And, I mean, they would play them loud. The Viet Cong didn't know what the music was. They were sort of afraid of it, I guess. It was an intimidation type thing. But they would play for the rock and roll, I mean, blast it out with some kind of a PA system. But Paint It Black was on there. And every Vietnam movie that you documentary or anything that you docudrama, you see, you'll hear Paint It Black. Yeah.
Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
There you go.
and Satisfaction didn't come out till 65.
I am not sure the name of the one that I always liked. Well, I don't know if you call Whistle It or anything. I can't even remember. It might be Miss You. Lord, I'll Miss You, Child. I can't remember the name of the song.
Real early?
I think so, yeah. We're going to come along with a Puerto Rican girl that's just dying to meet you. I can't remember the song.
Oh, but I'm going to get you wine. Yeah, that's off Beast of Burden. Yeah.
Good time like we used to.
How do you search that? I'll get it. Just glad to meet you. Okay. Yeah. Boom, bam. There you go. Pleased to meet you.
Well, is there
that's
a question
please,
that you are trying?
Pleased
like,
to meet you. Yeah,
the song's called
the name
Miss
of the song.
You.
Miss
yeah.
you. Okay, that's
please.
What I thought it was. I wasn't
100%
sure then.
I was pleased to meet
that
you.
One was
it's called
oh,
Miss You.
No,
I don't think
Miss,
we have that one.
Miss.
I will go get it because that's an awesome one. I can't believe I didn't find it on the list.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, say hello to the Queen of Canada.
Hey.
Hello.
Gonna take the wine.
Ha. Hello.
So, Rolling Stones.
I saw a red door and I want it painted black. No colors anymore. I want them to turn black. That's my song. I love it.
Well, my favorite is Sympathy for the Devil. I like that one the best. I like because of the Randall Flagg aspect.
It reminds me of the,
like,
there's a little black spot
like the
on the sun
better.
Today. You were Beatles. Yeah,
I think the Beatles had a more lyrical, more sensitive, more loving side, where the Rolling Stones were hard-hitting, truth-saying, really packed a punch in their lyrics. And that I like them for that.
You know, that's funny you should say that, because they did have a sort of an aura about, not an aura, but a presence about them. The Stones were, like you said, more of the honky-tonk, you know, and, rough with the Beatles, more soft. When, in fact, the Beatles were the ones that trashed rooms that were it's destroyed shit that were freaking out of control. And the Stones were not. They were
wow.
actually...
Did you guys ever see the Stones?
No, I never had a chance.
Oh, yeah, I got to
in my
I saw it once.
Yeah, they got to play in my city once, too, and it just about, it was just amazing.
I did it just to say I did it in my lifetime. I had a chance to go see the Rolling Stones. I knew they weren't going to be touring much longer, although they did. They toured forever. It was down in Oakland Coliseum. It was the I believe in August. It was 100 and something degrees in the freaking stadium. And this is one concert we didn't go on the grass. We just wanted some good seats up high, you know, and we'll just kick back, listen to the music instead of battling the field. And they had two other bands, and then Carlos Santana came up and freaking rocked. I've seen Carlos five times. Carlos is always good. But this was the last of the Rolling Stones tour. I think it was just the United States tour. And it was on Mick Jagger's birthday. So whatever date that is when I showed. They showed up 3 hours after Carlos stopped. We sat there and baked in the sun for freaking 100 degree weather, and we were in the shade, and it was uncomfortable. But they had these helicopters come in, these double bladed Hueys come in and over the stadium, and they started dropping ping pong balls out of the doors of the helicopter. Plus, they let like a million red and black balloons from the inside the stadium. Yeah. So the wash from the blades. Didn't let any balloons out. They just kept spinning around and around. It was quite impressive. Then once we had to throw a doll out one of the helicopters. So we're expecting to be a good show. You know, there were people actually had left. They start playing and people just started leaving. Either they couldn't hear each other on the stage, or they were so messed up. Because it was Mick's birthday and last whatever, but it was terrible.
Uh-huh.
You can say Carlos blew him. Yeah, and I couldn't believe. I took it, they can't hear. You know, if you get in a big venue like that, you got to have that music bouncing back to you, or there's a way you can keep time. That's what it sounded like. People were just leaving in droves. We sat there. I think we left. I don't know, maybe an hour into the performance.
Miss you was ready. If Stephen could read the thing on the board after.
Okay.
And here comes the song.
I've been holding out so long.
miss you, man. Oh, Steven, you got a little ditty about the song?
Yes, I do. Miss You is a song written by Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. It was released as a single by the Rolling Stones on Rolling Stones Records in May 1978, 1 month in advance of their album Some Girls. And it peaked at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 and number three on the UK Singles Chart. An extended version called a special disco version was released as the band's first dance remix on a 12-inch single. That's pretty cool. A little disco.
Yeah. Yeah, I was their reemergence into the rock scene in the 80s was quite outstanding. I didn't think it would last the way it did, but they still had some good music in them. The Beast of Burden era, you know. A little more on Charlie Watts. We lost the drummer to Rolling Stones this week. This last week, 24th of this month. 80 years old, died of cancer. In the mid-1962, Watts first met Brian Jones, Ian Stu Stewart, Mick Jagger, and Keith Richards, who also frequented the London Rhythm and Blues clubs. But it was not until January 63 that Watts finally agreed to join the Rolling Stones. And initially, the band could not afford to pay Watts, who had been earning a regular salary from his gigs. His first public appearance as a permanent member was at the Ealing Jazz Club on 2nd of February 1963. Besides his work as a musician, Watts contributed graphic art, like we mentioned before, and comic strips to early Rolling Stones records. So all that art was done by Charlie Watts, the drummer, such as the Between the Buttons record sleeve, and responsible for the 75 tour announcement press conference in New York City. The band surprised the throng of waiting reporters by driving and playing Brown Sugar on the back of the flatbed truck in the middle of Manhattan traffic. I didn't know that. Watts remembered this was a common way for New Orleans jazz bands to promote upcoming dates. Moreover, with Jagger, the fire truck, he designated the elaborate stages for tours. First contributing to the lotus-shaped design of that 75 tour of the Americas, as well as the 1989-90 Steel Wheels Urban Jungle Tour, the 1997-98 Bridges of Babylon Tour, the 2000-2003 Licks Tour, 2005-2007 A Bigger Bang Tour. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I read some of the interviews that he had, and in one interview, he said that he didn't really like rock music, and I'm assuming that he meant back then.
Like I would music. Assume so. Like you said earlier, to do it for over 50 years and not like it, that would be a little off.
Well, he said he joined the band because he really didn't think it would last 5 minutes, let alone, you know, 5 decades. But he kept with the band. Basically, because he said he liked the lads. He liked the other members, you know, Richards and Brian Jones and Mick Jagger. And, I mean, like you were saying about the not liking music back then. So I'm assuming that the Chuck Berry, Buddy Holly, these guys maybe didn't like the surfing music, you know, sound either. That was basically the rock, you know, some of the folk songs, the folky stuff. But he liked rhythm and blues. I know he's known for his backbeat. Listen to it; it's always got a backbeat. His drumming. And it makes the music kick back. You just sort of kick back to it instead of the driving drums, which is in the front, like other rock drums, like Zeppelin. Well, I can't say that because Bonham was a great backbeat dude too. So, the drummer controls the speed, the tempo of the song.
Yeah.
Charlie Watts is very impressed on his. I mean, to be a Stones, 58 years I was a Rolling Stones, my lord. What did you do, Charlie, when you were on Earth? What did you do? I was a drummer for a rock band, probably the biggest rock band ever. Oh, really?
Yeah. I will say that, not to try to embarrass my now 24-year-old son, but when he was still in diapers and barely walking, every time the Rolling Stones would start playing, he would stop what he was doing and start dancing when he was just in his diapers. Yeah, he loved the Stones. So I don't think he does anymore for some reason, but he did back then.
Now, this is in the 80s?
Yeah, like this was late 90s. But, you know, we played... Okay. I don't know, we'd have like VH1 or something on, and the Stones would come on, and he'd start dancing.
Yeah. Outstanding. Like a Rolling Stone. Let's play a song. Now, one of my favorite songs of all time is Gimme Shelter.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it was more or less part of the Monterey Pop scene. If you watch the documentaries of the, is it the Altima? They had the Hells Angels, Deep and Pretty. Yeah, give me
while
shelter.
Stephen looks on the topic board for the info, I will push play.
Give me shelter.
All right, yeah, that's a great song. Gimme Shelter. The song's inspiration was from Keith Richards seeing people scurrying for shelter from a sudden rainstorm, according to him. He said, I had been sitting by the window of my friend Robert Fraser's apartment on Mount Street in London with an acoustic guitar when suddenly the sky went completely black and an incredible monsoon came down. There were just people running about looking for shelter. And that was the germ of the idea. We went further into it until it became things like, rape and murder are just a shot away. Definitely a very powerful song.
Wow. Where were they when that happened? The monsoon?
In London. Mount Street in London.
In London. I didn't know they had monsoons in London.
There's a lot.
Yeah. I still think of cobblestone roads and, haystacks and drinking it. July
of
2006.
London,
yeah.
That might be a good segue to tell you that Phil the Poet from Over the Pond did a tribute poem specifically for Charlie. And I thought maybe...
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. So let's put that on the board, and I'll play his recording.
Okay. This is a poem by Phil the Poet called The Steady Beat of Gentleman Charlie. While Mick was strutting around the stage, Gentleman Charlie remained in his seat, making sure the music would never fade, adding a jazz influence to a blues beat. The backbone that kept the Stones rolling, the unsung hero of a genius drum sound, Gentleman Charlie kept the beat flowing while Mick and Keith tried to astound the audience with antics and puckered lips. Gentleman Charlie remained calm in his seat, lightly tapping the hi-hat, no over-the-top tricks, keeping everything in control with a steady beat. While the others were looking for satisfaction, Gentleman Charlie kept the pendulum swinging with a smooth backbeat countering the reaction of Keith's guitar licks and Mick's eccentric singing. The drum seat is empty. The calm influence is gone. Gentleman Charlie always kept the band in time. I wonder if they'll pay him a tribute by dedicating a song, or maybe he would have liked something in rhyme and poem.
Wow. He hit on, I'm trying to back up, there we go. I'm trying to back up here. I'm trying to find it. He was known in July 2006 issue of Modern Drummer magazine, Watts was voted into the Modern Drummer Hall of Fame, joining Ringo Starr, Keith Moon, Steve Ladd, Buddy Rich, and other highly esteemed and influential drummers from the history of rock and jazz. That same year, Vanity Fair. Oh, why did I touch the screen? Vanity Fair elected him into the International Best Dressed List Hall of Fame. In the estimation of music critics Robert Christgau, Watts was the greatest rock drummer of all time. 2016, he was ranked 12th on the Rolling Stones 100 Greatest Drummers of All Time list. Variety stated on the day of his death that Watts is universally recognized as one of the greatest drummers of all time. Music critic Robert Sheffield wrote for Rolling Stones that Watts was a ultimate drum god. He made the Stones great by conceding nothing to them. I've seen pictures of him. He's always sharply sharp dressed. I mean, I'm sure that kept the other guys in line for a while. He would have been the oldest one there and the oldest guy. You think? Yeah. He ain't wearing that. That's something wrong. There's a picture of him in this suit that just looks freaking. You can tell he had a good life. You know, he probably, when he figured he joined the band, they wanted to play, he probably got his go see, you know, have a good time with these guys, and then a little fizzle out. And 58 years later, he must turn back, look back and go, Jesus Christ, that was a good trip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Had it all, just shaking his head as he's walking up to his mansion, you know. Those kids had.
Isn't it cool how Phil put the other band members and stuff in the poem? And he called him an unsung hero and a genius on the drum. But I like, while the others were looking for satisfaction, Gentleman Charlie kept the pendulum swinging. And there's something about Gentleman Charlie that would probably be his jazzy blues name if he wasn't in a rock band. I think that Phil did a great job with his poem, and thank you for recording that for us, Phil. Appreciated.
I was surprised not to hear or see or read that there wasn't a Sir before his name. Why wasn't Charlie Watts ever knighted? Elton John, the Blues, Hollies, the hell are.
It's true.
Let's keep quiet. Yeah. Quite the. I've got stashed away here his the band's awards. This always blows me away too. And the worth. Right. Okay. Let's write down. What do you think the band's worth? So, what do you think Mick Jagger and each member is worth? Plus Charlie Watts on his death. Let's see.
I don't know.
I'm gonna say Mick Jagger's one of the enrichers that are pretty high up. I'm gonna say $200 million. Over $200 million. And I'll say the band's worth about the same. In the Rolling Stones.
I think they're worth way more than that.
Could be.
I'm gonna say the band itself is worth at least $1 billion, and
okay,
individually,
Nick, is how much?
What?
How much?
I think
the band is
$1 billion for the band.
Oh, $1 billion.
And the members are close to that for sure, if not beyond that.
Okay, it says here Mick Jagger is worth $360 million. The richest Stone member would be Mick Jagger. Okay. Which is the richest band?
I have to laugh because we're reading these on the internet, so they must be true. But the one I'm looking at says Mick's $500 million, Keith is $500 million, Charlie is $250 million. And Ronnie Wood is $200 million.
Yeah, 250.
And the band is $1.4 billion with a B. Yeah.
Yeah, that is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I said $200 million. $200 million. I wasn't too far off.
$1 billion. I was way off.
Oh, I had names, but the band worked. Let me find this image of him. He was the odd looking kid. When you saw the pictures of the Stones, he was sort of the odd looking one.
Hatter, what is the clip that you sent that says Charlie Fax?
Oh yeah, we could just play that. It's just some things about Charlie that few people know. On the recording of it. So
okay, well, if anybody has to slip away to the little boys' or girls' room, the clips are 8 minutes long. Ha ha ha. Here we go.
In the wake of Charlie Watts' passing on Tuesday, August 24th at age 80, I felt it was time to revisit some of the stories about Charlie's eccentricities, stoicism, and unflappable nature that made him one of the greatest drummers of all time and by far the most shockingly interesting Stone. To briefly go over some of the lesser known facts about Charlie Watts, did you know that he once punched Mick Jagger? One time, Mick Jagger drunkenly called Charlie Watts' hotel room at 5 a.m. and asked, "Where's my drummer?" When Watts picked up, irate, Charlie Watts got out of bed, shaved, got dressed in a designer suit. He went to Keith Richards' room and punched Jagger in the face. One version of the story said that it had an ending with Watts saying, "Don't ever call me your drummer again, and you're my blankety-blank singer." Keith Richards' version, which appeared in his autobiography called Life, included the detail of Jagger falling over on a tray of smoked salmon and nearly falling out of the window into a canal. The only reason why Keith Richards claimed to have stopped the fight was because Mick Jagger was wearing Keith's wedding jacket. Another lesser-known fact about Charlie was he didn't care for rock and roll. Growing up, Charlie Watts listened almost solely to jazz rather than 50s rock. He also reluctantly joined the Stones. He wasn't quite sure about it. Charlie said, "Look, all right then, I don't know what my mom's going to say about this." But he didn't actually have the highest hopes for the band. In 1981, Charlie Watts was quoted as saying, "I never thought it would last 5 minutes, but I figured I'd live that 5 minutes to the hilt because I love them." He had a dry sense of humor, and Charlie came off quiet in most interviews, but he liked to have a good laugh. He doesn't take himself too seriously when he posed with a donkey on the cover of the live album, "Get Your Ya-Ya's Out." Through sickness and health, Charlie Watts never missed a gig since 1963. Charlie shouldn't be known exclusively as employee of the last century, but also employee of the new millennium as well. Another lesser known fact was he was married for almost his entire musical career. That's right, Watts met his wife Shirley Ann Shepherd in 1961 during his first rehearsal, and he married 3 years later, making him the first Stone to tie the knot. She stuck with him through and through all of his fame and substance abuse issues, and together they had one daughter, Serafina, and two grandchildren. "She's an incredible woman," he once said. "The one regret I have of this life is that I was never home enough. But she always says when I come off tour that I am a nightmare, and she tells me to go back out." He also had a great signature. He would always sign his documents with the acronym CR. Quite possibly, the C stands for Charlie, and the R stands for the Rolling Stones. Something interesting about him, he was on the road quite a bit, and he sketched drawings of all his hotel beds. Sometimes he had a hard time falling asleep, and he would just get out and sketch. And another lesser-known fact, that his warm-up routine was based on jazz showgirls. To loosen up before gigs, Watts would stand backstage and perform a series of hip wiggles that amused Keith Richards to no end. He said he got the routine from dancers at New York City's famed Cotton Club. Another fact about Charlie, he was impeccably dressed. He loved suits and had a great sense of fashion. He was inspired by his father's love of tailored clothes. Watts became somewhat of an expert in the world of fashion, owning over 200 suits. He cited Fred Astaire and jazz legends like Miles Davis and Duke Ellington as his style inspirations that landed on best dress lists in Vanity Fair and in Gentleman's Quarterly magazine. Another interesting fact about Charlie Watts is he also loved cars, but he couldn't drive. That's right, Charlie Watts did not have a driver's license, but he would have suits to match his cars, just to look period appropriate while sitting in them and listening to the engines run. Another thing about him is he was obsessed with aesthetics. That's right. In addition to his love of fashion and vintage cars, Watts's fixation on visuals led him to pen a cartoon book about Charlie Parker, the jazz legend. and he illustrated the back cover of the Stones' 1967 Between the Buttons. Another interesting fact about Charlie Watts is that he didn't like hearing drum solos, and he'd often tell people to check out Buddy Rich, but the man never enjoyed doing them himself. "I can't do them, really," he said in 2012. "I get fed up halfway through it, attempting to do one, so I don't really do it. But I love hearing other people doing them. Certain other people. I'm more interested in drums as an accompaniment. I've always been like that. We're really more about the rhythm section than a drum solo." Lastly, he couldn't imagine life without drumming. Going back decades, Charlie Watts said on multiple occasions that he'd be fine if the Stones called it quits, but he'd be lost without the drums. "For me, there's no other way of life. If tomorrow it packs up, fine. C'est la vie, as they say in Germany," he quipped in 1973. In 1989, he explained that his wife Shirley hated the noise he made at home, so he didn't have a drum kit in his house. "To play the drums, I have to go on the road. I have to leave home, and it's like terribly vicious cycle that always been my life. I don't like living out of suitcases. I hate being away from home. I always do tours thinking they're the last one, and at the end of them I always leave the band." As recently as 2018, he said, "I love playing the drums and I love playing with Mick, Keith, and Ronnie, and I don't know about the rest of it. It would bother me if the Rolling Stones said that it's enough," before adding, "I don't know what I would do if I stopped." Keith is a great one for saying, "Once you're going, keep going. The big worry for me is being well enough." Charlie Watts has left us today, and he will be sorely missed, but he's left behind a world of music. He's also inspired many, many generations of musicians and fans, and we wish Charlie Watts' family deep condolences, and we hope there will be happier days ahead for all of us. Thank you so much for watching.
Yes, it is. Time is on my side. The Rolling Stones recorded two versions of this song in 1964. The first version is a looser arrangement featuring a briefer organ-only intro. It was recorded in London in June 1964. It was released as a single in the U.S. on September 25th of 64 and was included the following month on their U.S. album 12x5. The second version, more tightly arranged and featuring a guitar in the intro, was recorded in Chicago on November 8th of 64 and was released in the U.K. on January 15th of 65 on the Rolling Stones number 2. The later recording is the version that receives airplay and appears on most of the best of compilations. The single peaked at 6 on the U.S. Billboard Pop Singles chart to become the Rolling Stones' first top 10 hit in the U.S. A live version of the song from the band's 1982 live album, Still Life, reached number 62 on the U.K. singles chart. And if I may add to that, this song will also be found on the soundtrack of the movie Fallen, starring Denzel Washington and James Gandolfini. A great movie.
Yeah, and it's haunting in that. I saw that. I knew that Mr. Movie Buff would know that. You're awesome.
Now,
I haven't seen it.
We talked about this next song earlier. They said the Rolling Stones have probably released more iconic tracks than any other rock band or any other band in history. In fact, hardly surprising when you learn that they've been together for half a century and hold the record for the most recorded songs of all time. One of the most iconic of their incredible 439 tracks is Paint It Black. Released in 1966, it was the first single from the fourth album, Aftermath, and became an anthem for the 60s counterculture. What's more, it's one of our favorite tunes ever. Sure. Two very good reasons to dig deep and discover more about the song. Music critic Richie Unsberger. The most qualifies as the most effective use of the sitar.
original version was entitled Paint It Black Without a Comma. Keith Richards later said the comma was added by the record label Decca. There was no specific inspiration for the lyrics. When asked at the time when he wrote the song about death and depression, Mick Jagger replied, "I don't know, it's been done before. It's not an original thought by any means." 1966, the single topped both the United States and the United Kingdom charts, making it the first ever US-UK number one single to feature a sitar. Nearly 40 years later, in 2004, it was ranked number 176 of Rolling Stone's magazine list of 500 greatest songs of all time. Jagger got the line, "I turn my head until my darkness goes," from James Joyce's Ulysses. Talking on the Absolute Radio show, Stone's co-guitarist Ronnie Wood disclosed that Keith Richards had trouble remembering how to play the song. He revealed he always has this moment of hesitation when we don't know if it's Keith's going to get it right In the late 1980s, Paint It Black became associated with the Vietnam War due to its use in both the ending credits of the 1987 film Full Metal Jacket, and is used as the theme song for the Tour of Duty in CBS's TV show about the Vietnam War, which ran from 87 to 90. Sadly for the Stones, Paint It Black is one of those tunes they no longer control. They sold the rights to it in the 60s to ex-manager Alan Klein.
Wow.
Give it back, man.
Paint It Black. And if I may add to that, too, of course, Full Metal Jacket starred Matthew Modine and Adam Baldwin.
Really?
Yeah.
He's just showing off now.
We have Stanton. What's his name? Stanton. Oh.
Yeah.
I can remember.
The guy that was a real DI.
The guy that did the commercials and then he got in the movies.
Yeah, now I'm trying to remember his name. Picturing him. I'll look him up. IMDb.
Yeah.
World's greatest.
Didn't he have a show Made in America or something?
Emery, E. Lee Emery, R. I'm getting there.
What's his name?
It's Emery's his last name. I'm trying to remember his first name. R. Lee Ermey. That's his name.
Oh, that's it, Ermey.
Yep.
Yeah, what a nut. He got some show on cable. It was like Made in America or travel around to different places.
He did that. He also played a drill sergeant in the movie The Frighteners, but he played the ghost of a drill sergeant in that one. And he also played Insane Syrup in the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yep.
So he's been around a lot longer than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys that just because of who they are was good enough to be some kind of star on TV. I was just watching Bob Uecker, story of Bob Uecker. What a funny, funny man. And everybody just tells him he's got that sense of humor, and, you know, he's self-revealing kind of a...
Yeah, you know, he made me cry once.
lay it on us, man.
Yeah, Bob Uecker, he made me cry because I'm a huge Indians fan. And he played the announcer in the movie Major League. And at the end, when he starts yelling, "The Indians win it! The Indians win it! Oh my God, the Indians win it!" I started crying.
Mm-hmm.
probably left the Sox. Well, did he play for the Indians for a little bit? He played with for 18, just six different games.
He played with the Reds, I believe, Cincinnati, but I don't think he ever made it up to Cleveland.
Yeah, he's a homeboy of Milwaukee.
Yes.
He's a Brewer, yeah. And he was at Atlanta. I remember he was at Atlanta for a while. I can't think of the other ones. But anyway, the little YouTube thing on Bob Uecker is just hilarious. There's three different ones. There's one that it's sort of a narration of his life with interviews with everybody. That's good. But they've got one where he's inducted into the Hall of Fame, he's announcing the inductees to the Hall of Fame. And he gets going. And Johnny Carson he was on there like 100 times.
Yeah.
He was asked, why do you think Johnny Carson liked you so much? And he goes, I don't know. He's just a stand-up guy. I don't know. And he goes, no, because you don't give a shit. And that's what Johnny would say, because that man just doesn't give a crap.
Would it be okay if I read my poem to the fire?
Oh, yeah,
I'm
playing bongos. Yeah. Please allow me to introduce myself. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, Lady A. My queen.
I'm wondering if it would be okay if I read my poem that's inspired by Painted Black.
Yeah. Please do. You got to go get it, though.
Yeah. Just hang on a second here.
So how's Canada?
Canada is great. It's like the best country in the world. Just saying.
No, I got a dumb joke for you.
Okay.
What did the janitor say when he jumped out of the closet?
What did the janitor
Supplies.
Say when he jumped out? What?
Supplies. Supplies.
Okay, there, it's in the room there now, kids. It's called I See the Napalm. Got it?
Yep.
Running down the hall. Yeah.
Okay. And this, whenever I heard that song, Painted Black, and I don't know why, but it always reminded me of Vietnam. And it just did. It just was the song that, that's what comes to my mind every time I hear it. So I wrote this just a few minutes ago. I see the napalm and I wanted to choke back. No air to breathe. My eyes burn red and I wanted to choke back. I see the children cry, hanging on to mama's clothes. I have to close my eyes until the images die. I see the body bags with Yankee boys inside, with letters and her love, they came home to mom and dad. At home, people turn their heads, jeer and mock, they look away. Not a hero's welcome, it happened every day. I look inside myself, I see I'm filled with guilt. I see myself now. I want my innocence back. Then I'll retreat, be no more. I won't have to face reality, because it's not easy facing life when your whole world is a lie. I see the napalm and I want to choke back. No air to breathe. My eyes burn red and I wanted to choke back. And peace.
Yeah, I wonder how they took that, being associated with the that song, all of a sudden being associated with the Vietnam War. But I know they just played rock and roll. They did California Dreaming, and I know they played Jimi Hendrix, played Voodoo Child, and Purple Haze, and these Garden. these powerful PA systems on the helicopters. The Viet Cong didn't know how to handle that. They didn't know what that was. Crazy ass, huh? But yeah, I think this is. I think Gimme Shelter, Paint It Black. Two of my favorite.
Yeah.
What's your favorite? What's your favorite song, Lady A? Rolling Stones.
Oh, I like a lot of them. I like. I found a lot of them really very sensual and sexy, really. Angie is one of those songs. I'm looking at the list of the ones. A lot of the ones that were listed here tonight were some of my favorite songs. Hang on a second. I like The Beast of Burden, Paint It Black, Ruby Tuesday. I really loved Spend the Night Together. Time Is on My Side. And Wild Horses, loved that one. There were a lot of songs that they did. I found them to be very a powerful band with lots of underlying messages, I suppose. They were graphic in a sense. What's that song I'm thinking of with that? I can't think of it right now, but yeah, I liked a lot of their songs. They were great. I don't think people compare them to the Beatles all the time, and I don't think there's really any comparison. They're two completely different styles of music.
Well, I don't think they compare them. I think you're either in one camp or the other. Either you like the Stones or they like the Beatles. Just like in Motown, you were Temptations of the Pops. Just get that kind of
thing. Like
they were competing. They were competing at the same time.
Yeah.
I see. Well, that was very good, Lady. I love the. Yeah, you can't not think of Vietnam.
Yeah.
And like I said, they said they no longer own the rights. The ex-manager does.
Wow.
Deb, can we play? Yeah, there you go.
Sympathy for the Devil. Did you know that it's considered one of the best songs of the popular music era, and it's ranked number 32 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs of All Time list? It is also the 22nd best ranked song on Critics' all-time list, according to Acclaimed Music. Stated in the 2012 documentary Crossfire Hurricane, Jagger said he sings in first-person narratives as the Devil, boasting his role in each of several historical atrocities. The singer then ironically demands the listener's courtesy towards him, implicitly chastising the listeners for their collective culpability in listing crimes, killings and crimes. Yeah, very cool. And also quoted in the miniseries The Stand back in the 1990s by Randall Flagg when he frees Lloyd from the jail cell and says, "Pleased to meet you, Lloyd. Hope you guess my name."
Yeah. That was cool. And another one is in an interview with a vampire when Lestat's driving over a bridge in a convertible. That song.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think one of his first, he played a, it's an English movie named The Legend of Tom Horn or something like that. Tom Horn's some figure in English.
I'm not sure I've seen that.
Not a bad actor. You know, the David Bowie also I thought was.
Yes. Yeah. Very good. He was also in, Mick Jagger was in that movie across from, what the heck's his name? The Sheen boy that didn't take the Sheen name.
Oh, Emilia Estevez?
Emilia Estevez, yeah. What was it called? It took place in the future. Oh, my gosh. I must be getting tired. Can't think of the name of the movie, but it was a good movie.
Flatliners.
No, it wasn't Flatliners. Anthony Hopkins was in it, too. It was called Free Something. Free... I'm going to look it up. Free Jack.
Free Jack.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry?
Did you read the thing in the topic board yet that's labeled legacy?
Yeah, I believe I did. Yeah, that was the last break yes, I did. All right, what do I have Amelia after this on my board here? Okay. so, Deborah, what's your favorite Rolling Stones song? What was the first one you remember?
Well, you can't ask the Gemini what their favorite is because there's never one. Depending on my mood, like I really like the one we just listened to. Of course, I love Wild Horses. I really think Angie's a beautiful song, and here I go. I'm sorry, I can't ever just pick one.
Yeah.
Okay. If we go by the stats, I'm the one who downloaded all the songs and look at the songs on the list. I chose them, most of them, because I really like them. You know what else I like? There's something about the light, easy beat of that song, I'm Just Waiting on a Friend.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
So many good ones.
And you know what's weird? I must prefer the second version or the updated remix of the Wild Horses, because when it first came out, I don't think it was kind of meh. But now it seems like I can't get enough of this song. Not to mention the fact that both Jewel and Sheryl Crow each sang it too. And it sounds beautiful by a woman or by a man singer. So it's an interesting song. But again, I can't just pick one. How about okay. He's So Cold?
How about
Only Rock and Roll, but I like it. I mean, come on. How do you pick one?
How about No More Running for the Shelter of Her Mother's Little Helper?
I got that one loaded up, man.
Yeah, there you go. Is that one of the live ones, Tom?
Yeah. It's one I gave you. Yeah. Mother's Little Helper.
Okay, well, you didn't load the studio, did you?
No.
Right. Yeah. Even I can't.
Okay, no big deal.
Not one like I've been doing, but I'm going to push the button for Mother's Little Helper so that we can do one of the live ones
okay.
that Hatter wanted. So
okay.
even if you grab that yourself, it's that one. Stephen, yeah, that is one that Hatter added, so it would be down towards the bottom. Anyway,
okay.
here comes the phone.
Hello. Is there anybody in there?
What a drag it is getting old. Kids are different today. I hear every mother say, mother needs something today to calm her down. Little helper, lay yourself to on your way through your
Dr. Please. Yeah, I like this one a lot. Yeah, this song is about a housewife who uses prescription drugs to get her through the day. It turns around the image of a suburban housewife who's usually portrayed as, you know, cooking and caring for her family. And this is showing her as a drug abuser. So the Stones could get away with this because their image was that of a cynical and somewhat dangerous rock band.
Well, it's not like that. It was the era of Valium.
I, it'd be about my sister-in-law, too. Outside the door, she took four more.
How do the yellow ones, were they the ones that were shaped like a triangle and had a cutout B in the middle? I think one of my relatives took them.
Did what?
I remember when I was little, one of my aunt's diamonds, and it was a yellow triangle with a V cutout in the middle. So, yeah.
For what?
Valium. V for Valium.
Oh, yeah. Little blue pill.
Because, like, let's have a tendency to, like, you know, you put your shoes in the bottom of the closet and you put your purses and handbags up on the top of the closet. And if you borrowed a purse from my grandma, you had to make sure you held it over the bed and tried to dump it, because now and then those cutout things would pop up in those. So, you know,
whoa,
if she used it for a stressful event last time she used it, she would have put one or two in there so she would have them. And if she didn't wind up using them, they were, you know, in purses in her closet. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, I got the candy. Let's see. Yeah, I feel really bad. I think I'll quit telling that story about the Stones. That it was just a bad concert. I think, yeah. I probably shouldn't do that. Like, they couldn't have a bad day. Just it was the wait. They made us wait over 2.5 hours before they showed up in that heat. They better have played well. I remember by the time we left, it seems like they were playing better. But Mick Jagger's birthday lasted the tour. Come on. You don't think he was messed up back in the 80s?
You know, the funny thing is one of the things that always comes into my mind when I think of the Rolling Stones, and it has a little something to do with them, but it's not totally. There was a commercial, and it was something about winning tickets to see a Rolling Stones concert or something like that. And there's two friends standing there watching these TVs, like in a Walmart or something. And the one friend had won the concert tickets, and the other friend was like, "Yeah, Mick." And he turns around and does the Mick Jagger strut and does some moves. And his friend looks at him and says, "You are so not coming with me."
Get the moves like Jagger.
That's like Spicoli in Ridgemont High telling his buddy, "Mick gave me this pick." This whole philosophy thing, you know. No doubt.
All right, Hamilton. Yeah, it's hard to believe that was about based on a true story.
Which one?
Fast Times at Ridgemont. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
Wrote it. Actually, went undercover in a high school and wrote this. It's amazing.
Oh, no shit. No shit. Yeah. Because it's my high school, big time. You know that, and a little bit of what was that other one? High school, the freshman, darn it, it's two words, and it's like nonsensical words.
What?
God darn it. The movie,
who's
another
that?
High school movie. It's a...
Dazed and Confused?
Yeah, Dazed and Confused. That's it.
Holy.
Put a little bit of that. Ridgemont High. That was my high school.
You know,
the band and the van in the parking lot. Teachers left you alone, basically.
Yeah, I think that was one of the early Matthew McConaughey as well. He was the kid who just couldn't, or the man who just couldn't get let go of high school. So he was, still hanging out at high school. Yeah.
Well, his famous line is, his one thing about high school girls, I get 1 year older, they remain the same.
God, that's creepy.
I think if we pick our shirts off, we have a better chance picking up some chicks.
Damn.
Yes,
all right, now let's listen to this song, because the stuff that comes with it is pretty cool. Like, it's controversial. So let's see.
All right. Okay.
right. Excellent. Spend the Night Together. Yeah. The song features piano by Rolling Stones contributor Jack Nitzsche, organ by Brian Jones, drums by Charlie Watts. And I heard him go a little crazy on those drums a few times there. Piano, electric guitar, and bass by Richards. Lead vocals by Jagger and backing vocals from both Jagger and Richards. Usual bassist Bill Wyman does not appear on the recording. On the Ed Sullivan Show appearance on the 15th of January 1967, the band was initially refused permission to perform the number. Sullivan himself even told Jagger, "Either the song goes or you go." A compromise was reached to substitute the words "Let's spend some time together" in place of "Let's spend the night together." Jagger agreed to change the lyrics, but ostentatiously rolled his eyes at the TV camera while singing them, as did Bill Wyman. As a result of this incident, Sullivan announced that the Rolling Stones would be banned from performing on a show again. However, the Stones did appear on the show again and performed three songs on November 23rd in 1969. Deb put this little tidbit in there. In April 2006, for their first ever performance in China, authorities prohibited the group from performing the song due to its suggestive lyrics.
Jeez. Yeah, what had happened just in Ed Sullivan's studio, I believe it was the same year, just earlier, was The Doors, and he was not supposed to say "Get Higher."
But he hired it. And I don't think The Doors ever did go on Ed Sullivan again, did they?
They were banned. The guy come in there, his agent or somebody come in and go, "What the hell are you doing? You know, you want to do the Ed Sullivan show?" And Jim Morris said, "We just did."
Yeah.
You'll never play Ed Sullivan again. We just did, man. Yeah, I remember that was a big deal. Yeah, they were on like six times, weren't they?
The Stones?
The Stones on Sullivan.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not
how
sure.
How many times? There you go. How many times were the Stones on Ed Sullivan? The one thing that's for sure, the Rolling Stones finally captured the attention of the American audience. Six epic appearances. Rolling Spring eventually went on to get six times.
Did you know that I looked, actually Kay looked it up before we came over here, that the Rolling Stones started, what, 63, 64, and the magazine didn't start out until 69. Did the Rolling Stones get anything for that?
Good question.
It's on a different, right? That'd be like a magazine or paper. That's not music.
Yeah.
But yeah, I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It would now. You would have a problem doing that now.
I'm surprised there hasn't been a fight over it. Case in point, when I was growing up, when you watched wrestling, you were watching the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation. And then after all these years, the World Wildlife Foundation, who did admittedly have their name before wrestling, are the WWF. And the WWF in wrestling had to take the F away because they lost to the World Wildlife Foundation.
Oh,
so I'm surprised that something like that didn't happen. And that's a thought to be contested now. Oh, and by the way, the Doors, or Stephen, I think it was, the Doors appeared that time, that one time and only that one time.
Yeah.
Now, back in the day, the Moody Blues was the first ones, was the first band to have to go to court to tell what are the guidelines of copyright infringement and this kind of thing. The old rockers, their attitude was, well, of course they're going to play a couple of notes of mine or sound like my, me. You know, I mean, that's how we all learned how to play.
Oh, yeah.
Their attitude on suing somebody for that kind of thing was not even, they didn't do it. It wasn't worth their time. Why would you want to? But
the one thing
it's one
I'm sorry.
That's right. No, it's one of the recording studios and the companies own these bands. They're the ones that lawyered up and made it all freaking. Which I guess it's. I mean, back then didn't care if you sang their songs. They didn't even care if you put them on their album. You just had to. You couldn't do it to a band that's known to come after you. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the day, what Kay and I were learned from our show last night when we did Kenny Rogers, there were actually, you know, band members that would actually say, like Lionel Richie actually wrote a song saying, "I want Kenny Rogers to sing this song." This is the whole reason he wrote the song was for Kenny Rogers.
Yeah.
They did that
sure.
kind of stuff back then. And, it's just, what it is it's a disease that's more terrible than COVID, and it's called political correctness. That's what's killing everything.
Oh, God, yeah. Get rid of it. Throw it out the freaking window where it belongs, in the trash.
Because
you have to define intent. If I have a slip of the tongue and I say something that sounds racist, does not make me a racist. I am freaking sorry. I just misspoke. End of conversation. So you're not offended. If I didn't intend to hurt you, it's more of a blooper on me. Why would you want to destroy somebody for that kind of attitude? You're right. You just got to quit with that shit. Offended.
Right.
They better be under a doctor's care or lose. They better be losing weight under doctor's care, losing hair or sleep or can't eat. Then I'll listen to you. But otherwise, you're not offended.
I know.
You're the biatch.
Like crazy.
Well,
sorry. Yeah, exactly.
Say that again.
Go ahead, Deb. I'm sorry.
No. I said sometimes you're afraid to breathe because you might offend someone. But go ahead, Steve.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, I'm just thinking about this whole thing with the Cleveland Indians, and all of a sudden I interview this guy who's the leader of this group that actually won, and now the Indians are going to be the Guardians, and he doesn't look American Indian. He had an Arrowhead earring, but he looked pretty white bread to me. And I always said that I wanted to get a T-shirt that says, "What if the fact that it offends you offends me?"
Exactly. You saying you're offended, it pisses me the frick off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a waste of freaking time, and it's the media does it. Media plays the gotcha. 10 years ago, you said this, you wrote this, we're going to destroy you today. What? And what about comics? And in the entertainment field, more Andy Dice Clay. Whether like him or not, he was a freaking, his own comic. Bill Burr, another one.
Yeah, he was a comedy genius. No more Mel Brooks movies.
Yeah.
Mel Brooks did not make a movie today.
Yep. Exactly. Mel Brooks. Yeah. That's bad.
All those
and
laughs
would
never.
Oh, yeah. Why aren't they banning, trying to ban those?
Yeah.
It's like the lady, the girl that headed the movement to quit calling the attack helicopters by Indian names, the longbow or the Apache and some of the weapons. And she was suing the government, this whole freaking I'm insulted and this kind of crap, offended. So they went to the leaders of all the Indian nations, and they said, "No, we're proud to have a name associated with that beautiful machine." They were not offended, but they didn't have to. It's like they should have done it with the sports team. Come on, man, the Indians and the Redskins. What is offensive about it?
That's the whole thing too. Yes, some of those, like they said, the tribal elders the reason the Indians were named the Indians is because they had the first American Indian baseball player. So they changed their name from the Spiders to the Indians to honor that. Now, how is that offensive?
Bill Thorpe?
That's
yeah.
why I said you bleed nowadays and you offend somebody.
Yeah.
But all right,
well, the problem is they bowed down. What are they going to do? Were they going to sue him? I mean, what's the deal? They're going to sue him or just make him a bad name? Just kind of give him a bad name. Because nobody, no sports fan would freaking care. Nobody couldn't care.
That's right.
Yeah. Are you there?
What?
Calm down, honey.
Yeah. Oh, I am. It just pisses me off. Just, you know.
I got it.
Well,
I
think we figured that out.
Okay.
But listen, believe it or not, we're almost at the 2 hour
oh,
mark.
Wow.
We only got like 10 minutes. Left. I know it didn't fly by, but I'm going to put a song on. It was Stephen's turn to pick. Here we go.
Yeah.
Awesome song. Yeah, Waiting on a Friend. The lyrics see a more mature side of singer Jagger represented. He speaks of setting aside women and vices in favor of making some sense of his life and finding the virtues inherent in true friendship. Don't need a whore, don't need booze, don't need a virgin priest, just need someone to cry to, someone to protect. The song is noted for its dreamy qualities brought on by the soft guitar, smooth rhythm, and Jagger's lilting refrain of do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Stones recording net veteran Mickey Hopkins performs the track's running piano, and the Stones hired a jazz saxophonist, Sonny Rollins, to perform the solo on this song, as well as two others on the album.
Still there?
Still there.
Seems like kind of, okay. Well, cool.
Awesome.
I want to thank everybody. Thank everybody for call, for writing or calling in. Lady A, thank you.
Mickey Donovan's on the line. Linda, hey. Hey.
Linda.
Good to hear from you.
How are you?
Right on. Hi, everybody. Hi.
Hi.
I think Hatter's fishing. Hatter's fishing. Do you hear that?
We're fishing.
What's
that? I think we got one on. So how are you, Linda?
I was still recuperating slowly, but, I got about 9 months to a year still in my boot, and I just had the surgery done on the 9th, and it's like, now I'm kind of couch ridden for the time being until the swelling goes down, which it's still swollen. So I have to keep it up. And, it's a slow process. You know, it's going to be a year before I'm walking, but, you know, I will be walking. So that's a
winner.
Thing. Yeah.
Next
summer, hopefully.
Yeah, good.
I was going to say, the studio's been being obnoxious since yesterday, so just in case, how about if she reads the poem now before you sign off? Matter?
Sure. I just wanted to get it in on the time thing, which I already did. Thank you, everybody. But Phil the Poet, thank you. Lady A, thanks for calling in. Steven, always a pleasure.
Indeed.
And Linda, late comer. Want to go ahead and post your piece?
Okay.
Sure.
I don't know.
It's up there.
I don't know which song this is a tribute to, but it's as tribute as I could get in this morning. So it's called Love Gone By. And it goes like this. I reach out for you in the darkness of the night, but your absence is the only thing I feel. You're gone and moved away so that now I'm on my own, searching for the spirit that is real. The emptiness that spans this place is mighty and so dark and taunts me in the middle of the night. You are gone, my love, so far away, not leaving but a trace, leaving me no spectrum of the light.
Oh, it was you and me. Let me please introduce myself.
Whoa.
I'm a man of wealth and taste. I lay traps for troubadours.
Oh, my gosh. I wasn't even in the studio. I wasn't in the studio, and yeah, but I also turned it all the way down after it was over. So it's wow, that was freaky. On my studio, it was still turned all the way down.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry, Linda. Yeah, I wasn't even in the studio
okay,
either.
Should I go ahead, please? Yes. Okay, the years we had together were so loving and for real, and you gave me every pound of strength I need. But now that you have gone away, tears have filled my eyes, and now it's just my heart that has to bleed. Wherever it may be that you've gone to see, wherever it may be you've gone to roam,
Remember this, my lovely friend, that I love you so. My love for you is stronger than a stone. I will always think of you with a smile on your face. I'll think of you with a lovely heart. But if you feel it's time to leave, I can't stop you, dear. I guess it's time to make a brand new start. I know I'm going to miss you for a little while. I wonder if you're going to miss me too. I'll just think about the way you always made me smile and feel lucky to have had a friend in you, in poem.
Very nice. Yeah.
Thank you.
Very emotional, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That's smooth. They read very smooth. I'm impressed, always.
Thank you.
And it seemed more like a tribute to Charlie himself than like one specific song, especially with the gone by after all this time and he had been sick for a while, and it could be to so many or anybody that's long gone by. It's just packed with sentiment.
Right.
It's good to hear you read.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here. I'm a little shaky, but thank you for having me.
Yeah, haven't heard you on Mondays for a while, Linda. Missed you.
Yeah, well, I'm taking a lot of pain medication, and that makes me kind of loopy at times, and in the evening is my worst time, so I'm kind of sliding in here before my dose and, trying to keep it straight. So, but I'll be back, for sure. I think I'm going to chime in tomorrow night at your JC and Virgil's show and check that out. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
That's a vanilla.
I'm working on getting it back.
Vanilla.
Thank you guys
thank
ahead.
You. And yeah. If you want to listen to a song with us, Hatter, what I figured we'll do on this one is you tell me what you want to go out of here with. I'll put the words up for it so that Stephen can read what the song has before. And then we can just play the song to leave. So what song do you want to close out with? Your other live one?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Let me get that right up. All right. I'm going to put this on the chat wall so Stephen sees it. And then after he reads this, I will push play. And be sure to join – oh, before I do that, be sure to join us tomorrow at 11. Topic is vanilla.
Vanilla.
As a team of voices. Mm-hmm. And, Stephen, what's that, A Poetic Slice?
Tomorrow it's Sky Show, Storyboards with Esther Coleman. It's Dungeons & Dragons Race Volume 3, and the races that she wants us to write to are Gnome, Orc, Half-Orc, and Changeling.
Awesome sauce. And if you look on the board and read, then we will play the song. Thank
All
you,
right,
guys.
Good
love
song. I love this one. Honky Tonk Woman. In this song, Mick Jagger sings about having a duel with two different honky tonk women. The first is a gin-soaked barroom queen in Memphis, likely a prostitute. The second is a divorcee in New York City. Jagger would sometimes introduce it as being a song for all the whores in the audience. How about that? Like many Rolling Stones songs, it has a highly suggestive lyrics, but they are just subtle enough to keep it from getting banned by radio stations. British rock bands often wrote lyrics that were ambiguously offensive. It's like she blew my nose and then she blew my mind, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Awesome topic. Tactics, great music. I have fun hanging out with you two guys. Linda, it was awesome to hear from you. And
yeah,
yay. Glad you called.
Thanks for the audio, Phil. Thanks, guys, for posting.
Yes, you got.
Love and respect. Here we go.
Love and respect to you, Jim.
Are you feeling good?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Love and respect to you both.
See you later.
Talk tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.